Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Java with Josh. I'm your host, legislator Josh Lafazan. Today we have a really exciting show with actress Sammy Gale joining us. As we say every week, having big dreams is common, but figuring out how to achieve those dreams is rare. On this show, we interview some truly incredible people to share their journeys to success and give you the tools to reach your dreams. So grab your cup of Java and let's go. Sammy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. And we spoke at length. You know, you're a remarkable person, and we're going to get into your whole story, but I have your bio here, and it was about 8 pages, so I had to condense it. But for our viewers who are meeting you for the first time, actress Sammy Gale can currently be seen as the lead in the Netflix feature Candy Jar, opposite Christina Hendricks, Helen Hunt, and Jacob Lattimore. And for the past 11 seasons, has starred as Nikki Reagan Boyle on the hit CBS cop drama Blue Bloods. Sammy began her acting career as Baby June in the off-Broadway production of Gypsy, starring Patti LuPone. Sammy then reprised her role when the production transferred to Broadway shortly thereafter. And in 2018, Sammy graduated from Columbia University with a dual degree in political science and art history. So I know we were laughing before we started because I know you started to interview me. So today's going to be all about you. I'm an enormous fan. My grandma Marcia, who is listening, is an enormous fan of Blue Bloods. You're known by so many people, and you're just an exceptional talent. And I want to start and ask you, how in the world did you get started in this industry?
Well, thank you for that very, very kind introduction. I got started when I was, when I was 5. I started dancing at quite the professional level. And I was traveling to New York by the time I was about 10 to take classes at a professional school in New York City called Steps on Broadway. It's where Broadway dancers and dancers from the New York City Ballet train. And I didn't do any acting, just dance, but somebody saw me in one of those classes and offered me a role in The Grinch on Broadway the first year that it came around. And unfortunately, I couldn't do it because my brother had a bar mitzvah that was sort of a blowout event that was over 4 days. It was a Thanksgiving bar mitzvah. And my mother said, you know, so long as you and your brother and your sister get straight A's, we'll let you do whatever you want, but you cannot miss your brother's bar mitzvah. And this show required that we do sometimes 3 shows per day. Or 4 shows per day. So I would have missed 16 shows. So could not do this show and also attend my brother's bar mitzvah. So my brother felt very bad and he looked and looked and looked for other opportunities to get me another audition. And he saw Gypsy with Patti LuPone. He had no idea who Patti LuPone was, neither did I. But he thought for some reason it looked like a good opportunity. It was at the City Center, New York City. And I asked my mom if on one of these trips to New York where I trained to dance at this special school, I could go to an open call to be Baby June and Gypsy. And she sort of laughed, but said, sure, you know, I'll take you. So I went with my grandmother and her to an open call with 5,000 kids outside of Alvin Ailey standing in the rain. And somehow I made it to the end of that, and then I learned that there was another slew of kids that, you know, had agent calls, because if you have an agent, you are in a separate batch of auditions than just the open call for auditions. So I kept sort of competing, and somehow got to the end and was Baby June in that show, and that sort of catapulted the rest of my opportunity as well. Or after I finished that show, I got to audition and be in The Grinch the second year round on Broadway. And then while we were doing The Grinch, we found out Gypsy was going to transfer to Broadway in the same theater that I was doing The Grinch in right after The Grinch closed because it was a holiday show. And then my brother continued to act as my agent. He had me auditioning for so many opportunities that I became overbooked because ultimately he was a child. He didn't understand that, like, you can't audition and be in Billy Elliot while you're also in Gypsy. I had gotten Billy Elliot, this did happen. And it was a conflict because I was still doing Gypsy. So we had to bring on a manager and an agent eventually, but my brother has continued to be instrumental in my career, both in terms of my education and also in now helping actually craft the roles that I play on screen. We have a production company together, and now we make movies together that he writes and we co-produce. Fast forward a little bit, I guess, to wrap this long story up. After Gypsy closed, I've been on Broadway and in shows for about two and a half years. Started doing some straight plays. I did Jonathan Demme's first play. Jonathan Demme directed The Silence of the Lambs, amongst many other amazing films. I did some stuff with the Atlantic Theater Company. And then I thought I was going to have to move back to Florida, where I was from, because it was getting to be a lot to keep two households, one in New York, one in Florida, while I was doing these plays that paid virtually nothing, but were amazing opportunities. And the day before we were going to leave, I went to a commercial audition, and Tony Kaye, who's a pretty famous film and commercial director, saw me, said, yes, please be in this commercial, but also I need you to be in this film. He gave me my first film role. I never thought I wanted to be in film. I always thought I wanted to do Broadway and dancing, but I fell in love with acting on that first project. I was co-starring with Adrian Brody and Christina Hendricks and James Caan, and just an amazing cast of actors in a film called Detachment. And the last day of Detachment, Adrian Brody had coached me to audition for a show called Blue Bloods. And I went, somehow ended up being picked to be the latest member of the Reagan family, and the rest is history. I was very, very fortunate to have gotten that opportunity at such a young age to be on what would become such a seminal show in TV.
It's really incredible because, you know, so again, Grandma Marcia, she's listening, huge fan of the show. So many of the people I know are huge fans. I promise you'd say hi. I appreciate that. So many people love and adore the show and love and adore the Reagan family. And I have to ask, so can we talk a little bit about more about what it's like to work with Tom Selleck and Donnie Wahlberg and Bridget Moynihan? I mean, icons in the industry, and you're part of this family. You know, what's it like to be on this show?
Certainly icons in the industry and incredible actors, but also just amazing human beings. I think I am most grateful to have grown up with role models, you know, like them, because not only are they super talented, but they also thrive at making time for their family and giving back to their communities. And I just am so grateful that I had all of that guidance, both in terms of what I do for a living and also in terms of how to lead a good life, as I went through my formative years on that show. So it's great. I mean, I have to pinch myself every day that I get to work, because it's never felt like a job, not once. I always feel like I'm going to work and getting to play with my favorite people on the planet. And I think that that sense of love and family and the reality of our bond off screen as much as it exists on screen really translates on camera, and that's why people love the show so much.
Well, you know, the closest to an understanding of what a day-to-day looks like on set is like if you watch Entourage, right? That's the closest all of us are going to get to like what a day-to-day looks like. You live this. Like, what is a day-to-day look like for you? Because I mean, it's this is your job, you know. So I get up and I joke that I'm going to fix potholes today. Like, you know, you're going to get up and you're going to be on this amazing show. What is it like? And take us through that day to day.
I hope that we can fix things too.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
It's a different thing, right? You know, my job is to be a professional empathizer. So I think there are many ways that you can change the world. And I think one way is to represent people's experiences so that they can see them and say, hey, I relate to that. And hey, you know, someone sees me. And I think it's very important. So when I go to work in the morning, that's what's in my head. Like, let me maybe not put a smile on somebody's face. Maybe I'm going to make them feel something that's not always happy, but hopefully it's something relatable and that they can sort of take their own meaning from. But to answer your question more specifically, you know, you get up pretty early usually. When we film these dinner scenes, for example, on a Monday, I might get called to work around 6 a.m. For hair and makeup. And we always joke because it's more like Monday brunch than Sunday dinner in reality. We don't always shoot on a Monday, but we shoot the dinner scenes around 9 a.m. usually. You know, you see a 1 minute scene, but that scene can take 3 to 4 hours to film, now even longer because, you know, we have all of the COVID protocols that we follow. So, you know, when you see one person's face from three different angles, that's three different shots that were set up. And chances are that means the scene was done three different times just to capture that person's face in those three different perspectives. So a lot certainly goes into what we do. We are always amazed by how much our crew does to bring our show to life. But it takes a long time to do that. So the days are usually long, not necessarily for me if I'm going to shoot just one scene, but they'll shoot, you know, four scenes per day. And everyone comes in and out as needed for whatever scene they're a part of. But yeah, I mean, we have, it's sort of like a normal job like you. We have lunch, you know, it's just like a lot more public in the results, but the work atmosphere at Blue Blood specifically is really familial. We just adore each other. So like I said, it's never felt like work.
It's amazing to hear you say that. You know, every guest who comes on gives me a nugget that I keep, you know, of information or a catchphrase. And being a professional empathizer is something that I love because it's really people bond with their favorite characters. It gives them a sense of whether it's relief or a sense of family or a sense of belonging. You know, that's why I think TV and media is so important. I have to ask, obviously, in our careers, we grow and we learn. Is this something you knew that you had a talent for forever? I mean, you work so hard at what you do. Or is this something where, you know, you had mentors who helped you develop? You know, because I often joke that I knew, you know, growing up, I wasn't going to be a professional basketball player. I knew. But at the end of the day, you know, being 5'9 and Jewish precluded me from being in the NBA. But like, that was a hard realization that I had, like, at a later age than I'm proud of, that I like wasn't going to the NBA. Like, you were able to, you know, be professional.
Preclude you from anything.
Thank you. You know, my mother tells me the same thing. But I do want to ask, is this something that you knew you always could do? You know, did you always have the confidence and knew that this is something you could do?
I was fearless. I was always willing to go after what I wanted. But to tell you that I knew that I wanted to be an actor, that wouldn't be true. I knew I wanted to be a dancer, a performer from a very young age. But I think it wasn't until I worked on that first film and especially worked closely with Adrian Brody that I realized how powerful of a job being an actor was. Not powerful in the sense of like you have all this power, but I just find that acting is connecting and it helps people to connect. And I don't know, I just, that is what my passion is for. I think as I've gotten older and I've sort of put my tentacles in other things, whether it be helping my brother run a campaign for supervisor of elections or creating films that represent underrepresented stories. I think I now concentrate more on trying to use what I do as sort of a medium for social change. That's where my head's at now. And I don't think that when I was younger, I fully grasped the capacity for film to do that. So when you ask, you know, did I always know what I wanted to do? I think the goals evolved. But I certainly had an inclination for performing.
I appreciate not only the honesty, but your authenticity. I think it's one of the reasons so many people adore you is you radiate this authenticity, and I appreciate it because I joke that if I have a celebrity in my phone, it's you. And you are so normal and so down to earth. How do you, and we're going to move it because I see the map behind you. We're going to talk about your campaign and your brother in a second. How do you maintain that sense of normalcy and self in this industry and seeing yourself on screen, going to award shows? I'm assuming you've had to pinch yourself more than once. How do you maintain that sense of normalcy?
I think it comes from my family. I've always, grown up in an environment in which I was always, taught to appreciate the opportunities that I was given and to never take anything for granted. So I always credit my family for keeping me down to earth. But I think that there's an even more important reason behind the necessity for that. And that's that as an actor, you need to be able to represent so many different experiences. Like, you cannot be just this stuck up, popularity seeking person. Like, it will not translate when you're playing someone with a very different experience from that. So as an actor, you have to be a chameleon. And so I think it's my job every day to remain neutral so that I can step into whatever shoes I need to. Certainly I can play the, sort of erudite cosmopolitan girl. And you also want to be able to play somebody with a totally different experience from, maybe a smaller town in like where I grew up, suburban Florida. You need to be able to straddle all of those spheres, which are remarkably connected once you actually investigate the seemingly different spaces. They are not so different. So I try to remain neutral for that reason too.
I appreciate so much how you have the sense of self and you have the sense of normalcy and approachability. It makes doing this interview easy, although you tried to interview me before we started. And we're going to get there.
I feel like I've just gone on so many tangents during this interview, and it's all the fault of me just laughing for 10 minutes before we started, and nothing is connected. But I hope, John, wherever you are, you can parse something out of what I'm saying here.
You're doing great, John.
I deserve the right to read you, by the way.
It's in the fine print. And for our listeners, John is our incredible designer and engineer.
John.
Thank you, John in the cloud. I want to ask you about the campaign, because what's really wonderful, your brother is an amazing person, not only just in terms of sheer intellect, but in terms of compassion and desire to make a difference in the community. He ran a remarkable campaign down in Florida, and you doubled as a senior advisor. So can you talk about what that was like to be involved in the campaign and what it was like to be shuttling back and forth? What a hectic and wild time it must have been.
Yeah, so pre-COVID, I was probably flying about 3 times a week between Florida and New York City. I didn't intend to be so involved at the onset. I had studied political science when I was in college, but never really thought I was going to use it. And when my brother started his campaign, he was running for supervisor of elections in Broward County. And for those of you who might not know what exactly that job is, sort of like, if you remember seeing the supervisor of elections or the equivalent in Arizona come on and speak about the election, this past cycle, it's that gig. And when he started, he thought, I need to start with a bang. I want to do something no one's ever done before. And I want to travel to every supervisor of elections office, all 67 in the state of Florida, to determine best practices that he could bring back to Broward. And I thought, wow, like, that's so interesting. I haven't seen so many parts of Florida as an actor. I'm always talking about gaining whatever experiences possible because I think they can help inform characters that I play and just sort of make me a more well-rounded person. So I thought, well, I should go on this trip. And so I went with him, and, you know, I think when we set out, we thought we were just gonna maybe get some pamphlets on different practices at the different offices. And as we started the actual tour, we started asking if we could speak to somebody in the offices, and we met with over 30 supervisors in the end, which just goes to show, what is the phrase? If you don't ask, you don't get. So if you ask, you might just get. So we got basically unfettered access to the entire electoral system in Florida. I mean, not the entire electoral system, because not every county was as transparent as others. But I mean, we got tours in so many different facilities, and it was a world-class education. And I became super passionate about the need for voter outreach and voter education, both across the state, but especially in Broward. We would travel to some counties that would say just like devastating numbers of young people, devastatingly low numbers of young people were voting. So Chad and I knew that we wanted to do something about this, so that win or lose, we were making a difference in our community. And we put together sort of an internship program that we thought we'd run in the summer with middle and high schoolers, is what we had planned, in an actual setting. I guess he had used your sort of template with your internship program as inspiration for what he wanted to do. And then COVID-19 hit, and not only could we not meet in person, but so many students had lost their internship opportunities. And he thought, well, why do we need to just shut this whole thing down? Why don't we expand this opportunity to the first ever large-scale virtual campaign internship and invite students from all different levels of all different ages from across literally the world to work on our campaign in an actual program where we gave them an education, bringing people like Josh on to speak to the students about what it was like to work in government, to educate them on how to do phone banking, and also to help them conduct their own research on some subject of their choice. And so we did that. We had over 80 students from, I think, over 27 states, or it was like crazy. And I became sort of a full-time campaign advisor and really an instructor for 3 months over the summer. My show had been shut down. So I had a lot of time and I really wanted to make a difference in the community. So we, along with the help of our amazing students, called nearly 30,000 people per week, I think, to help them get signed up to vote by mail in light of the virus. And we also educated them about Chad's candidacy and the process. And my brother earned, I think, about 51,000 votes with no notoriety or recognition to his name before running just months prior. So certainly was a big splash. Unfortunately, he lost, as I think you know, by 0.3% of the vote. But I think he's gearing up to run again, and I'll certainly help him do that. I think, as I said, there are many ways through which we can effectuate change. One way is through doing things like running for office and serving your community in that way. And another way is through representing stories on screen and seeing what kind of change you can achieve in that regard. And I don't think that they're mutually exclusive. I want to continue to do both. And I think I will.
And what's so special is, you know, I have two brothers who I adore. They're my best friends. And when I was running for school board, you know, I have fond memories of putting out lawn signs in the early morning with my brother Justin, or knocking doors with my brother Aaron. So to see you be so close with your brother, and to see you you guys helping each other for so, you know, because it's been mutual for so many years, warms my heart. I want to move a little bit because I have two more questions for you. One of them is very important, And this is about these Instagram Live baking sessions, because I was not given a heads up, which I'm still a little salty about. But I want to hear what it's like to have a fan base. I mean, when you do Instagram Lives, you know, if I do them, you know, a couple of my friends will tune in to heckle me. But I want to hear what it's like to have, you know, this fan base. Because, again, you know, many of us do Instagram Lives. It's a couple of our friends, like, heckling us. You have, like, a lot of fans that tune in. So what's it like to have a fan base?
You know, there is something very gratifying, I think, about being able to engage with fans in real time. Before you had something like Instagram or Twitter, you know, people would watch the show and they'd love the show and they'd maybe tell you in fan mail, or you would just sort of get a sense from going outside every day, but you couldn't really see their reaction in real time as an actor. You know, I love to entertain. I love to make people smile. So I think the thing that I love most about an Instagram or Twitter is that you can get feedback immediately. And that's awesome. And then also, I just like love getting to know all these people, this community of people that have formed around the show and have been so generous with their love for me. It's just been an amazing community of support that I never imagined that I would have. So it's very cool.
Well, count Grandma Marcia in that fan club.
Yeah, well, I always want to give back. That's why, like, you know, the Instagram lives, I'm totally not answering any of your questions. I'm so sorry. But the Instagram live, I'm still, like, in the laugh mode. But the Instagram live, you know, was really a way to give back to the fans. I want to continue doing that in any way I can. Same as all, you know, call any fan or your grandmother or, you know, I just want to say thank you, because truly you and that community are keeping me going and keeping me working. And I think that's something that people should really be grateful for in my position. So
next time when we have you come back, we'll have you do the interview. Is that, and you know, the listeners, they missed that, you know, the half hour before we start. So we're going to have you come back. But this is our last question. And we ask every single guest on the show this question. You have done so much. You've achieved so much. You've grown so much. You are just an amazing person and an exceptional talent. The question is, what would you give in terms of advice to your younger self? You know, who doesn't know what you know now, who doesn't have the skills and talents you have now. What is that piece of advice you would give to your younger self?
I would say to prepare to hustle every day as much as possible and to never stop hustling. Because no matter how much talent you have, if you're not forging connections and you're not constantly trying to better yourself, people will eventually advance beyond you. So I think you have to treat every day like day one. I don't necessarily think that I didn't follow that advice. The reason that I sort of hesitated when you said that is because I think I had a fearlessness when I was young that goes away as you get older and experience, especially as an actor, more and more rejection, you know, to get every, I've had a lot of success and I'm very fortunate to have had that, but, you know, to get every job, you're rejected for 99 others, and I'm no different than anybody else. I mean, I'm lucky to just get that one job. You know, it's so hard to even just do that. And I think that takes a toll eventually on the fearlessness that makes you get the job in the first place. So I guess what I would really say is to hold on to that no matter what, and to do whatever you can to keep taking risks and chances no matter how much failure you face. I don't like using the word failure because I really do think every experience, you know, you can glean something from and learn from and can be turned into something positive. But you got to prepare for it and try and stay positive and fearless in the face of all the rejection that comes with being an actor, because there is a lot of it, even for somebody like me who, you know, has been fortunately pretty successful since I was young. It's a constant battle. You got to hustle every day. You got to, you know, remain relevant. And, you know, not just, it's not about remaining relevant. It's also about just doing work that you're proud of and, you know, that you think is going to make a positive difference in the world beyond, you know, a paycheck. So that would be my advice.
I think that's a perfect place to wrap. We're going to have you back on the show because, again, the half hour of the bloopers behind the scenes that you know the listeners didn't get to view. Thank you for what you do, and we have no doubt that this next chapter is going to be just as amazing as this chapter. So, Sammy, thanks for being on the show. We're going to have you back on soon. Thanks so much for tuning in. And thank you to Sammy Gale for an amazing conversation. Make sure to click subscribe to our podcast and check us out on Instagram and Facebook for videos and bonus features. I'd also love to hear your questions and comments. Feel free to shoot me an email at josh@joshlafazan.com. I'm legislator Josh Lafazan, and thanks for joining us for Java with Josh.